Good afternoon, everyone. The meeting of the Ways and Means Committee will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the April 23rd meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Are there any additions, corrections, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving those minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay, members, we have three items of business on our agenda today. First is an amendment to the budget resolution, then the public safety bill, and then the legacy bill. So, members, for the first order of business, the budget resolution, this, I'm afraid, is an oversight of the chair that the chair was going to originally put in when the original budget resolution was passed. We have done this in some past years, at least, to set a target for the Minnesota Correctional Industries Revolving Fund, the MinCor Fund. The chair will move the BRES01A4 amendment to the budget resolution, which basically would set a target of zero for that MinCor Fund. And I do want to mention that if you look at the date of it, and the time, this was something that we actually time-stamped and did before we saw any other amendments that might affect this. So it wasn't in response to anything. It just was something I originally had intended to do and hadn't done. So is there a discussion of that A4 amendment? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This tends to be one of the funds that has been made available in the past for items that aren't usually thought about in the budget. I would note this chair transferred, I think, $1 million out of this fund at one point in time. And so, members, I would encourage you to not set that limit. I believe there is nearly $7 million currently sitting in that fund, nearly $7 million.
Okay. Other discussion to the amendment? See no discussion. I'll renew my motion that we adopt the A4 amendment to the budget resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A4 amendment to the budget resolution is adopted.
I think this is
all right. The next item of business is the public safety bill, and the chair will move that House File 2856 be referred to the General Register. Chair Johnson, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair Johnson, do you want to go through the bill, or do you want to take, I know there are at least a couple of technical amendments, do you want to take those first?
We can take, if you choose, you can take the technical amendments first.
Yeah. Okay. Members, there are two technical amendments. Why don't we take those to get the bill into the shape that we need to? I'll move that we adopt the A34 amendment, and this is, I believe, a technical amendment. Chair Johnson, can you speak to it?
Now, this amendment deals with Representative Lesch's bill dealing with the exonerated parties, all the parties involved with this.
I'm wondering if we have a microphone problem for you, Chair Johnson. There we go. Is that better?
Does that sound better?
Yes. Oh. A little better.
A little bit.
Okay, why don't you talk into it? Maybe it's not picking up very well. Talk into it a little bit more.
Okay. This deals with Representative Lesch's amendment or bill dealing with the exonerated parties that have been incarcerated, and gives a technical amendment that was agreed to by all the parties involved, and as far as we know, there was no opposition to this.
Okay. Is there any discussion to the A34 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A34 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A34 amendment is adopted. Okay. Next, I'll move the A35 amendment. This is language that is already in the bill, but we are moving it from one chapter of law to the 611 chapter of law, which we felt was a better section for it to be in. And I do want to thank my co-author on this, Representative Hillstrom, who has worked on this language. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. And Representative Hillstrom, do you have any particular comments on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. So, members, This relates to cameras in the courtroom, and there is controversy about whether or not the legislature has the ability to prohibit the court from allowing cameras in the courtroom. And so what this is doing is creating a substantive right. The defendant would have the right to say yes or no, and the victim in the case would have the right to say yes or no. Thereby, I think it takes care of the separation of powers issues.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Any other discussion of the 835 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I support the policy, and I think you know, Mr. Chair, I agree with you on this underlying thing. As I'm looking at this amendment, though, I notice that it uses the word victim, and I don't know about you, Representative Hillstrom, but, you know, I usually think when you're having a criminal trial, a person's not usually considered a victim until there's a conviction. You know, they're usually a complainant. Or a witness. So I don't know if that is something that maybe needs to be, I agree with who you're trying to give this to, but I'm not sure use of the term victim here is really what you want.
Well, I guess certainly the complainant would be different than the witness, but Representative Hillstrom, do you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, I think we just put it in the victim's rights statute, and so I think that's the reason why it has the word victim, and if you use the term witness, there are all sorts of witnesses that aren't necessarily the person who the crime was perpetrated against, and so in order to give a substantive right, you kind of have to have either the person who the crime was committed against or the defendant. Otherwise, I think we get into the issues of separation of power, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Other discussion to the amendment? Representative Wagenius.
Actually, when you...
Could you speak into the mic?
Gave the phrase instead of looking for a one word like witness... When you gave the phrase, the person who, whatever phrase you used, sounded really good to me. So that might actually be a better choice because it doesn't get to the conviction, and it's not going to be the witness.
You know, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said, Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Maybe the solution is not to use a word like witness, because that doesn't work, but to use the phrase that Representative Hillstrom used. It doesn't get into a conviction. She used a phrase, and maybe she could say it again, but it was something like the person against whom
the crime was perpetrated.
Against whom the crime was perpetrated. Is the exact definition of what you're trying to get at, and without stumbling into something else. So I just was suggesting that that might be a better phrase.
Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you know, the issue is that a person really isn't a victim until there's a conviction. I mean, you could use the term alleged victim. You could use the term complainant. I get it that it's not just any witness. Under this, who would have the right? But I don't know what the surrounding law is here, so maybe Representative Hillstrom is correct with the use of the term here. But anyway, this, you know, we don't have to resolve this at this moment, but I just kind of wanted to flag that. It just sort of jumped out at me because saying the person against whom the crime was perpetrated doesn't fix it either because you can't say that for sure until you've got a conviction. That's what the trial is for.
You can work.
Well, I think I appreciate the discussion. I think we'll continue to talk about it, and if there is a better phrase that we should put in there, we're certainly open to discussion as the bill moves forward. Any other discussion to the A35 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A35 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A35 amendment is adopted. Okay, I think... Representative Johnson, why don't you, before we get to these other two amendments, why don't you present your bill? We'll then I know there's someone who wanted to speak to at least one, perhaps both of the amendments. And then there are a couple people that want to testify on the bill. But I think let's first start with you presenting the bill, and then we'll go to these other two amendments, since they're not more technical amendments as these others were.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is a supplemental budget items for the Department of Public Safety, Department of Corrections, Supreme Court, District Courts, Guardian Ad Litem Board, and the Public Defense Board. Last year's omnibus bill included significant increases in funding for public safety. In this non-budget year, we are focusing on those areas that were special consideration supports a request for more urgent supplemental funding. Using this standard, we agreed with the governor that more funding was necessary for the Guardian Ad Litem program and for the Post Board. We also prioritize funding for members' initiatives that seek to enhance the public safety and carried a fiscal cost. First of all, in the Supreme Court area, we increased the budget $182,000 to fund a case management system for House File 2906 dealing with stays of adjudication. In the district courts, we increased the budget $618,000, which included one judge unit and two additional court administrators to implement the ignition interlock program that we have in this bill. A large part of our funding went to the Guardian Ad Litem Board. $3,667,000 to hire additional Guardian Ad Litems that were found were needed in the OLA report. Since 2013, child protection cases in the state, where states and federal laws mandate a guardian ad litem, have significantly increased by 55% statewide. And if this funding is needed to catch up with those goals to protect those children in those cases. Also in the Public Defense Board, we increased funding $850,000, dealing with three different bills. Reckless driving while texting, stays of adjudication, and sex offender 25-year supervision. On the public safety, we increased $253,000 broken down as follows. For a working group for vulnerable adults, a task force for missing and murdered Indigenous women, and in the Department of Corrections broke down as the $1.5 million for intensive supervised release agents, and also $1 million of that $150 million for reimbursements to the counties for the portion of the supervised supervision that they also would do under the intensive probation. Also in the Department of Human Services, we have $12,000 for part of a bill for to help with to redo a paternity training video. We also did some change the formula a little bit, the revenue adjustments of $172,000 for the Post Board, and to help them with the shortfall that they are having. And we have a few other bills that that are also in dealing with policy that are in this bill.
Okay, thank you, Chair Johnson. All right, at this point, let's turn to the other two amendments that we have. And Representative Hilstrom, are those your amendments?
Mr. Chair, I believe that they were submitted to the committee, and I'm happy to bring them before the committee, Mr. Chair, with the resolution that you passed. They are going to be out of order, but I believe Representative Dean is here and had asked you, Mr. Chair, if he could speak to these. They were his amendments.
Okay, and to why don't you formally move one of them, Representative Hilstrom, so it can be officially before us.
I would move the A30 amendment.
Representative Hilstrom moves the A30 amendment, and Representative Dean, would you like to come forward?
I get mixed up.
Representative Dean, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. As Representative Hillstrom mentioned, that given the resolution that was passed, these will be out of order as there aren't money available. But I wanted to talk a little bit about them. And if you would allow me actually to give like 2 minutes to the director of the program of the Peace of Hope Transit Rides to speak to what they've been doing over the past several years. These programs are actually for not just the inmates that we have locked up in our facilities, but it's also for those family members. We know that when our criminal justice system removes people and places them in facilities, it affects more than just them personally. It also affects the family. And we know that one of the number one indicators of an individual recidivating is if they have visitors or not. So this is a critical program that provides transportation to those families. And as I've learned in the past several weeks, it goes beyond just my neighborhood. It's many of you, all of yours neighborhoods. And this particular program, you know, provides services to people who may be incarcerated throughout the state of Minnesota. So if I could get the chair to give me just a couple minutes to have the director of the program come down and say a few words.
Well, Representative Dean, we are a little bit under a schedule today because there are some other conflicting committees. I guess when you talked to me about presenting, I guess I didn't realize that you had other testifiers on these amendments. So I guess if I could, I'm happy to have you speak about them, but I don't know that I want to bring in additional testifiers just because of our time schedule.
Even if, Mr. Chair, even if I have her just 2 minutes to introduce herself and say what they've been doing the past few years?
All right. Real quickly, Representative Dean.
If you'd come down, Ms. Brooks.
Welcome to the committee, ma'am. Could you state your name for the record?
Sharon Brooks Green.
Well, welcome to the committee. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I am Sharon Brooks Green, the CEO and founder of Peace of Hope, and I'm glad to be here today to talk to you about Peace of Hope. We've been around since 2012, and we do provide transportation to and from all 11 prisons here in our state. We're currently under contract with the Minnesota Department of Corrections to do that service and allow programming for those families. Our goal, our entire goal, is to reduce recidivism and reduce crime. It affects our entire state, our reputation in the country. We have the second highest rate of recidivism. We're looking to change that. We're looking to change that. We're also looking to increase the graduation rate in some of the poverty, some of the hopelessness and depression. All of that comes from not being able to see your family, just regular visits that aren't occurring because we only are able to serve high-risk offenders at this point. This amendment would allow us to serve the entire state, to serve all of the families, all of the high-risk offenders and low-risk offender families, to address recidivism, race, and hopefulness instead of hopelessness in our state, and not have the reputation of being the worst, almost the worst in the country for recidivism. So Peace of Hope is here to work in a bipartisan manner for everybody, for everybody's hometown in all 87 counties. We want to do that. We're doing it now. We want to continue to do it. So I appreciate you supporting this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am, for your testimony and for all the work that you do. Representative Dean, any other comments?
No, just thank you, Mr. Chair. The intent of the amendment was to try to get funding so they can continue the programming through 2019. And it's one of those things that we're sort of out of cycle with how we do the budgeting here, and that's why it's important. We're going to be looking for other types of areas where we could get funding for this program to continue. And until we final gavel, I will continue to try to find places to fund a program that's so critical.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that a few weeks ago I had an opportunity to visit with Ms. Brooks and the CO, and she stressed, and I happen to concur with her, the importance of maintaining that family contact, and this is what the amendment would do. It would allow that to continue, and I think this is something that we have to take a good look at in terms of making sure those families remain connected. You know, when we think of where the prisons are in Minnesota and where the folks that are incarcerated may live and where their families might be, transportation is a huge issue. And very often, because of the situation they're in, we're talking about low-income families that perhaps don't have an automobile or can't afford some other form of transit to be in touch with the person that's incarcerated. So after my conversations with Ms. Brooks, I was absolutely convinced that this was a good program and one that needed to be continued. So I hope if it's not adopted today that as the legislation moves forward, we can find a way to provide the funds to keep the program going.
Well, thank you, Representative Carlson. I appreciate Ms. Brooks' testimony and what they're doing, and I certainly do believe that family connections are important. Representative Hillstrom, do you want to withdraw it then at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will withdraw the A30 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hillstrom withdraws the A30 amendment. And Representative Dean, did you wish to speak to the other program?
Yes, Mr. Okay. Chair, if I could. So if you need to move it, we can do that. If not, I can just speak to it.
Why don't you just feel free to speak to it then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The other amendment is specific to a program that addresses mothers that are incarcerated in the Shakopee facility. Whereas the Peace of Hope program is a statewide program, this would focus specifically around mothers and their children to make sure that not only is that connection maintained, but also looking at issues relative to education, relative to nurturing mothers and child relationships, so that when that day comes when they're reunited outside, that that's been a relationship that's been maintained, so there isn't that alienation that sometimes will take place. And, Mr. Chair, I just want to speak again to overall the funding that I've asked for is really primarily for 2019. I realize that next year we'll have a budget year and there'll be the opportunity to really fund these programs so they can be more than just a one-year funding, because it's important that families have that ongoing connection for those loved ones that are both inside facilities and that are both out in the public and living there. So I want to thank you and thank you, members, for the opportunity to speak to this. I know it's a little bit unusual, but, you know, we have the opportunity to continue to look at doing things that relative to the public safety bill that will actually improve public safety and make the residents and the community safe in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Dean and Representative Hillstrom. All right. At this point, I know that we have a couple of the commissioners that wish to testify. I wonder if I think the first one I've got on my list is Commissioner Dolman, if she could come forward. Commissioner Dolman, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill. For the record, my name is Mona Dolman, and I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. As you well know, Minnesota is experiencing a significant drug epidemic. We have seen a significant increase in the number of opioid deaths. In 2016, there were 675 drug overdoses, 395 of which were opioid-related fatalities. In addition, since 2008, there has been a 566% increase in methamphetamine seizures and a 5,000% increase in heroin seizures, and that is reported through our violent crime enforcement teams, or commonly referred to as the drug task forces that the state helps to fund across the state. This is a snapshot of what is happening statewide, but it does not include all of the efforts that on behalf of local law enforcement, so there's even more out there. As deaths have been increasing, our turnaround time at the BCA Drug Chemistry Lab has been increasing as well. Currently, it takes approximately 120 days from the time the evidence comes in until the time we can get results out to process all drug evidence that comes into the lab. A 30-day turnaround time is our goal. Based on our experience in working with on a pilot project with Hennepin County, we have found that a 30-day turnaround time for drug evidence eliminated, on average, 8 additional court hearings. And in addition to this potential criminal savings, a 30-day turnaround time benefits communities by ensuring justice is not delayed and those who are in need of treatment or other services can access them in a timely manner. In order to be successful, equal efforts, we understand, need to be given to education, treatment, prevention, and enforcement. The governor included in his supplemental budget several investments in the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The governor proposes two additional drug investigators and a criminal intelligence analyst to provide assistance to tribal communities and drug diversion efforts. In addition, the governor proposes 6 additional scientists at the Drug Chemistry Lab to reduce turnaround time of drug evidence. These small investments will make a significant difference in combating this epidemic. These proposals are a piece of the governor's opioid action plan that would be funded from the general fund in fiscal year 2019 and then from pharmaceutical companies through the penny a pill proposal in 20 and 21 and ongoing. Our communities need these investments now. The number of deaths continues to grow, as do the number of drug seizures and evidence submitted to the BCA lab by local law enforcement agencies from around Minnesota. We know that the backlog will continue to grow because we are taking in more cases than we are processing daily. The governor's supplemental budget request is critical for our law enforcement partners, the criminal justice system, and most importantly, our communities. Thank you for your reconsideration of making this critical investment.
Thank you, Commissioner Dolman. Questions? Representative Wagenius.
Yes, Commissioner, you made a reference to how many court appearances would be avoided if you had a 30-day turnaround time. Did I get that correct?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, yes, that's correct. We worked on a pilot project with Hennepin County, and I can have Superintendent Drew Evans speak more specifically to that, but we realized that because of a shorter turnaround time, half as many court hearings could be scheduled to get through the process.
Representative Wagenius.
That would seem to me to be a great savings. So did you figure out the savings of that would be realized by that half a dozen court appearances? I mean, I think of a court appearance, I think of a lot of people being there. Can you put a monetary value on that?
Mr. Evans, would you like to speak? Mr. Evans, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Drew Evans. I am the superintendent at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. We did not quantify a value to that, but this is information that's been provided to us by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office as they've been working on this program with us, with their courts. But obviously, 8 hearings would save a significant amount of time, effort, and money for the court system if that can be replicated ongoing.
Representative Wagenius.
Yep. I think it would be really helpful for us to know that exact number. So if Hennepin County could come up and say, well, there are 6 people in a court hearing, and give us some range, not an exact number, a range of how much money that would save. It does seem to be significant and might overall be more than worth the investment.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we certainly can ask. It's the judicial branch, and I don't know if they are quantifying that type of information, but we certainly can look into what we may be able to do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. I also have Commissioner Roy that wanted to testify. If Commissioner Roy could come forward.
Thank you.
You don't look like Commissioner Roy. Could you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, my name is Lisa Wojcik. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Unfortunately, Commissioner Roy had a Board of Pardons meeting this afternoon and regrets he could not attend. We want to express our concern that our three budget requests were not funded. The first budget request was for our offender health care contract. The last biennial budget, we requested funding for 2 years for this offender health care contract. We were not funded by the House or the Senate as we were putting our contract out for bid again. And we put the contract out for bid. We got five requests, have selected a new vendor. We actually are saving the state about $3 million. But we are requesting $7.8 million to pay for offender health care. Our second request is for population growth. We are anticipating that we will have approximately 355 additional offenders in fiscal year 19 than was projected from the previous biennium. That comes at a cost of $7.8 million. And this will be direct bills that we will be paying to county jails for housing our offenders. Our last request for $710,000 comes from the governor's initiative on the opioid bill. We will be providing pre-release services for offenders that have addictions and medically assisted treatment for when they go back into the community. People who are clean from opioids over a long period of time and then go back up into the streets, they may try to take the same dosage they had previously taken, and their chances of dying are much more significant due to the fact that they have been clean for quite some time while they've been in prison.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Assistant Commissioner, you mentioned the failure to fund the health care costs, and I don't think you referred to, why we need to do that. But let me just give you the softball question. Can the state refuse to fund health care for inmates?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, we have to pay for offender health care. We do not have an option for that. So if we do not get this funding, it will have to come out of the prison budget somewhere. And so that is significant for us.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for your testimony. Members, at this point, our counsel, Mr. Sullivan, has informed me of two technical amendments that should be added to the bill, and I know that these don't meet the 24-hour rule, but they are technical amendments, and I guess let me tell you what they are, and I presume there's no objection if I waive the 24-hour rule for them. It would be page 3 after line 17. Page 3 after line 17, insert, this is a one-time appropriation. And page 4 after line 27, insert, this is a one-time appropriation. So basically, we're just there are two appropriations that should have had language in it. They're actually one-time appropriations, page 3, line 17, and page 4 after line 27. And I would move that we insert that language. Any questions or discussion to that motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of that oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, while this funding bill has additional money for the guardian ad litems that the governor requested, none of the governor's funding request is in this bill. All of the additional spending that goes in this bill, whether it's to the Board of Public Defense or to the courts or the Department of Public Safety, are all new spending policy provisions. None of the current requests from the governor are in the bill. The health care contract is of particular concern, as it is constitutionally mandated that we provide offender health care. And by not funding this contract, it is a serious problem for the Department of Public Safety. But there is some policy provisions in this bill that are both good and bad. I'll start with a few of the good proposals that folks may support. the child pornography enhanced penalties is bipartisan, and Representative Pinto worked with Representative Grossel to make certain that that language is appropriate. Members, it stops the cycle of people losing their driver's license for failure to pay their fines. If you get a ticket and you can't afford to pay it right now, your driver's license is suspended. This would stop that practice. It would say strictly for nonpayment, you can't suspend a license, and strictly for not showing up in court, you can't suspend the license. That is a new provision. It expands the use of ignition interlock, and there is a push for safe highway driving of folks to have ignition interlock on every DWI all the time after the first. This moves in a direction to say you can no longer sit out the time period of getting your driver's license back for a year or 2 years, that you don't get your license back unless you go on the ignition interlock. So that waiver of time is will no longer be available to folks. But the one thing I think that is the most controversial piece in this bill is the protester language. This enhances penalties for folks who protest on the highway or at the airport, as well as on the bus, interfering with bus transportation. And then there's certainly a change to the interest that people pay. So it encourages folks like insurance companies to delay getting to court so that they don't have to pay out. It lowers the amount of interest that they have to pay to people who are injured. So there's plenty of reasons to vote for this bill, and there are plenty of reasons to vote against this bill. It's been an honor to serve on the Public Safety Committee, and that's all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Johnson, closing comments.
Mr. Chair, members, overall, I believe this is a very good bill. There's some things in there, some other things I would like to have added. There's even things here I wouldn't mind taking away. But the committee put this bill together, and it was a very good committee, and we worked on both sides of the aisle, and I appreciate that. And with that, I'll...
Okay, seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2856, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 2856, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Okay, next we have House File 4167. Chair Gunther moves that House File 4167 be referred to the General Register. Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. 4167, we probably should take care of the amendments first. Is that correct?
All right, that would be fine. Which one would you like first, Representative Gunther? A19?
A19.
Okay, Representative Gunther moves the A19 amendment. Representative Gunther, can you describe that?
A19 establishes a suffrage commission. And we reduced the amount that was determined by the humanities to be $500,000 for this commission. And this is for women's suffrage, and I think it's a very appropriate thing, and I think it's a momentous occasion. 100 years ago.
Representative Gunther, I'm sorry, I just was distracted there for a moment.
I would appreciate the approval of A-19.
Okay. Any discussion to the A-19 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A-19 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A-19 amendment is adopted. And I think Representative Erdahl, is the A-21 amendment your amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl moves the 821 amendment. Representative Erdahl.
Okay, part of the bill deals with the display of art in the new open spaces of the Capitol. And this particular amendment basically is self-explanatory. It deals with the preference being given to local artists, Minnesota artists, in displaying the art in the Capitol.
Any discussion to the 821 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was contacted, and I'd just like to get the response to the Mr. Representative Erdahl. The request was that perhaps disability be added to the list of potential artists. And I'm just at this point not moving the amendment, just seeing what the reaction of the maker of the amendment would be if disability was added.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. I hadn't thought about that, but I don't have any particular problem with that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would request or make a motion that we amend the amendment, perhaps where it says including age, comma, disability, comma, gender, and racial and ethnic identity. Then, if
okay, Representative Carlson moves an oral amendment to the amendment, page 1, line 6, after the word age, comma, insert disability, comma. Discussion to that oral amendment. Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Carlson oral amendment is adopted. Amendment to the amendment. Discussion to the amendment as amended. See no discussion. All in favor of the A21 amendment as amended being adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The A21 amendment, as amended, is adopted. We have one individual who wished to testify on the bill. That is a representative, Michelle Witte, from the League of Women Voters, if she could come forward. I'm not sure if I'm saying your name right, ma'am.
Yes.
Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much, Chair Knobloch and committee members. I'm simply here to say thank you very much for inclusion of the Women's Suffrage Commission in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of the Omnibus Legacy Bill, hoping it stays the course, as indeed we feel it's very appropriate for this commission to be supported as part of our cultural heritage to promote and the roles and accomplishments of Minnesota throughout the long struggle for the 19th Amendment. I did want to be able to ask answer any questions you had about why a commission. People say, why do we need a commission? And we feel it's very important for four reasons. One is to highlight Minnesota's specific history. We have a specific story to tell within the 100 years, some very exciting firsts in Minnesota for our own state pride. Also to serve as a clearinghouse to maximize the resources used across the state for event coordination and promotion, and also to inspire and educate our population and build on the great civics learning that this body has moved forward to be able to offer competitive grants throughout the state of Minnesota for people to highlight this great accomplishment. And lastly, to provide an opportunity for this esteemed legislative body to underscore the importance of continuing to promote full access to and participation in this great democracy. As you all know, we're continuing to live out the history with your own Michelle Fischbach becoming the first female president of the state Senate as early as 2011. So our history and cultural heritage with regards to this important centennial is really important and a signature opportunity. So we feel the commission, especially as well managed through the Humanities Center, would be a tremendous opportunity for everyone throughout the great state of Minnesota. So thank you for your consideration.
Now, thank you, Ms. Witte. Discussion to the bill as amended. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Well, seeing none, Representative Gunther renews his motion that House File 4167, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 4167, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
All right, members, in terms of scheduling, tomorrow we will have the Health and Human Services Bill and the Transportation Bill. I intend to have the Transportation Bill amended onto the Health and Human Services Bill. We will also, pending referral from the Tax Committee, have the Tax Bill. Then on Thursday, I think there may have already been sent out something on this, but we would have the state government finance bill, the jobs bill, the environment bill, and the agriculture bill. And those will be amended on to House File 4099, which is the vehicle bill, 4099. So that would be our agenda for Thursday. I'm expecting it to be the same sort of schedule otherwise as we've done, that after session each caucus can meet and confer about the bills, and then an hour or so later, depending on sort of the time, we will be in Ways and Means. So are there any questions about that? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify that then, because Rules is going to be meeting after session, so when will the clock start ticking relative to having the hour? Because Health and Human Services and Transportation for both caucuses might take a fair amount of discussion, and then you mentioned taxes as well.
Yeah, Representative Carlson, tomorrow could be a longer day, and I guess I wasn't aware that there was a Rules Committee after session tomorrow, but we'll try to work our schedule around that so people that are on Rules, you know, can meet there. I would imagine that won't be a real long meeting unless, but I don't know what the agenda item might be. But we'll try to accommodate that as best we can.
Yeah, just because I think we'll probably need the hour this time. If you can kind of work around that, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Seeing none then.